afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, day you're watching this. Falcon Cast, got guys pointing over here. Way to my left, it's the quarterback, DJ Shockley. Right to my left is Jay Adams. I'm John Michaels. We'll hang out with you for the next 40 minutes to an hour, however long we feel like talking, because guess what? We are 1-0.
Woo! That happened.
How great does that feel?
That happened.
It's amazing. I said it on my Facebook page this week is, I don't care how winning comes, and I know that like some people like really concern themselves with the style points, right, which don't matter. I don't care how winning comes; it never gets old, and it never feels bad.
No
such thing as a bad win.
No, you know the funny thing is, and Jay, we were down on the field, and both of us were ecstatic after the game, high fiving, running around. I couldn't run; I kind of limped around, but it's neither here nor there. I mean, high fiving, you could just see the elation. From guys like us all the way up to Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas Dimitroff did a fist pump, and I don't know if they caught this on TV. He looked like Tiger Woods on a Sunday, circa 2005. Yeah! Excited. Yeah. Dan Quinn's high-fiving everybody. I think people get lost with how important it is to win in the NFL and how hard it is to win a game in the NFL. Shock, you've been in the league. You guys work really, I mean, the work that goes in between training camp, preseason, getting ready for that opener, then to play on Monday Night Football and have a dramatic game like this, that's why we're so excited today.
That's my main point when I look at the entirety of it and why, when you just said winning trumps everything, regardless of how it happens. And I remember you going all the way back until, you know, you're doing off-season workouts and you're sweating, and you're playing for nothing. And you get into training camp, and it's early morning, it's long nights, and then you get to a point where, all right, we finally get to play a game, and you pull everything into just 3 hours of everything you've done for, you know, weeks and months, all that culminates into one freaking night, and it feels good.
Wow. Salty language.
It really makes you feel good, man. I tell you, just to go out and get a win, and I was really excited by the atmosphere. The atmosphere was electric in there. The guys had to fight through a lot. You know, it started good. It was ups and downs. You know, it was that third quarter. Everybody talking about, oh, these old Falcons. And, you know, they were resilient. They came back and they fought and they finished. And I know that's one thing that Coach Quinn always talked about is, we want to be a team that finishes. And this team did that. And I was excited to actually, you know, be there and be a part of it and be able to watch it.
You think about the confidence that comes from this one win. Okay, it was one win. It was against a team that you weren't supposed to beat. Everybody had counted you out.
Right.
I think the ESPN poll showed only one state had the Falcons winning. And
that was Georgia.
It was Georgia.
Yeah.
So everybody had counted you out. You come out in with this big lead, starts to fade away, and you still fight back and you still win the game. I think that adds so much confidence to a team that's really just trying to find its footing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I think that can just carry you so well going forward. You got a couple of very tough games coming up here, but getting that win under your belt, I think the intangible factor really, really kind of comes into play here.
And I'll add one last thing to it, Jay Mike, is that with all the talk about Coach Quinn coming in and everything he's implemented, everything he's talked about since day one, wanting to be, you know, everybody knows fast and physical, being that type of team and to see it come together and get a win, it's probably one of the most relaxing feelings that you can have, man, for it all to come together. And you'd be like, whew, now you can take a deep breath and say, all right, everything we worked for, everything that he's, you know, instilled in us, you know, and we finished it. We did it. You know, it was something that we worked for. It's not just something he just said and said, all right, we got to go out and do it. Actually did it. And I think that was big for them.
Well, Jay, you talked about confidence and how you build. Well, it's a lot easier when you come in and realize you have a short week. You finish up Monday night, you get Tuesday off, it's back to work Wednesday, and then all of a sudden you've got to be on a plane on Saturday to go play a team on Sunday in the New York Giants, who are feeling the complete opposite of the way you're feeling. They're saying, wait a second, we dominated a game for the most part against the Cowboys, and our own, you know, mess-ups there at the end, clock mismanagement, ends up costing them a game. So they've got the different feeling. You can walk in feeling confident, watch the film of the Giants, and I watched that entire Sunday night game and go, we're better than that football team. And that's confidence you get because you just beat arguably the best team in their division in the Philadelphia Eagles, and you did it in dramatic fashion. We'll start with this, one of the headlines from the game. Dan Quinn talking about the defense, the energy that they brought. I got a couple of names, and I know we'll get to Picks to Click later on, and one of them.
We better get to the Picks to Click.
I bet you we do.
We better.
But Justin Durant, O'Brien Schofield, Vic Beasley, you know, Paul Warlow, name a bunch of guys. These guys brought energy, and they were fast to the football, something that I haven't seen around here in a long time. Philly is a great screen team. Justin Durant was reading screens like he knew the play was called.
That was one of the biggest things that I noticed in this game is the swarming tackling behind the line that this team brought. I mean, DeMarco Murray, one of the best running backs in the league, couldn't find an open lane anywhere there in the first half. And you saw that defensive mentality, that energy, that fast and physical side of this team that we've heard about for so long. I think that's super encouraging. The other thing that's encouraging is the marked improvement of several guys that have been here for a few years. That, and we'll get, I'm sure we'll talk about this and Shaq will gloat about it for a while, but that third and one tackle by Paul Warlow at the end, maybe last year, maybe 2 years ago, he doesn't make that tackle.
Right.
I know he had one early in the game where he made the initial hit, let it slip. You know, his teammates came in and bailed him out on that one. But that was such a clutch tackle that I don't know he makes last year. I think you're really starting to see the work on the technique, all of those things come to fruition. And Dan Quinn said in his Monday press conference, look, we had 9 missed tackles. That's my biggest concern. I don't know that there were that might be the least number out of any half from last year. I mean, there's just been such a marked improvement on that that aspect of the game.
Watching the game for me is from a different point of view, and I look at the overall perspective of the recognition that they put in for defense and also the attention to detail. Those guys, when they substituted, you can tell there was a system in place. The D-line, when they was coming in, they was coming in waves. They had 4 guys. They were coming in. They were getting out really fast. So there weren't any substitution problems. Usually you see that with a team like Philly who has, you know, who wants to go fast, who wants to get up and go. They catch teams in the mix of changing guys out. You didn't see that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Philly's a good team. Chip Kelly's a good coach. There were times where he found, you know, advantages for them matchup-wise, and we saw that especially with Darren Sproles, but he's going to do that to a lot of people. Right. And this defense, I thought, went out, and like you mentioned, were physical. They flew around to the football. You saw red jerseys everywhere. You saw these guys really being energetic, and I thought their intensity level was, for 4 quarters, was high. Even in that third quarter when they were fighting, you know, they were still trying to get out of the Bradford. And a lot of people were talking about, they didn't get many sacks, but when I look back at the film, I saw a lot of guys getting a lot of pressure on Bradford.
Yes.
He was forced to throw the football earlier than he wanted to 4, 5, 6, 7 different times, and people don't see it. Like, even on interceptions that he threw, both times it looks like, oh, Sam Bradford just threw a bad pass. He doesn't see Willie Mostert out there. But it's Grady Jarrett looping around on the ET stunt to get the pressure, forcing him to throw it a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. And just to talk about that play for a second, it was actually Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley side by side, your 2 draft picks, causing havoc in your first game on Monday Night Football as rookies, causing Sam Bradford to throw an interception.
How many times have you seen those guys do that at Clemson, right, probably? Right. And that's easy. You get two young players that have played together before.
Sure. And when was the last time that we ever remarked about 4-man pressure? Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since we've remarked about how the Falcons were able to derive pressure from 4 men.
Yeah.
And that's such a huge thing. I think if you're focused on the fact that the Falcons didn't get any sacks, you're focused on the absolute wrong
thing.
You're
missing the entire
pressure
game.
Yeah. Pressure was huge in that game, and I think it led to so many things.
Vic Beasley was that far from getting a strip sack.
Oh, yeah.
That far from getting a strip sack, if you guys can see. That was really close.
And it ended up being an incompletion on a big play. So those things add up.
You know, one of the things I saw was dictating the line of scrimmage. How many times did you see last year the line of scrimmage be dictated to the Falcons' defensive line? Guys were being moved wherever they wanted. Quarterbacks never were off their launch point. They'd drop back, have a cup of coffee, throw the football. The Falcons, even when they didn't get sacks, were in the backfield. It was pushing the pocket, whether it was the big package that they had in with Solei and Jackson and guys like that, whether it was Hegman, who, by the way, Pro Football Focus graded him the highest-rated Falcon of the week, said he had the best game. O'Brien Schofield looked like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy flat-out came to bring it on Monday night.
And here's one. I mean, I think – I don't know the exact numbers. I think they had somewhere around 80-some yards of rushing. DeMarco Murray, who just talked about, 8 carries – 9 yards.
Amazing.
The rushing champion from last year, 8 carries, 9 yards. You held him to that. Most of the stuff the running backs did, they did in the pass game.
Right.
So you shut that part of the game down and made them really one-dimensional And it allowed you to have that big four-man rush and come after him and just pin your ears back and go get Sam Bradford.
How about this for a second? And I know I sometimes I speak from a fan perspective. I was in the gym the day after the game, and of course you hear all the guys. I was in the gym. You know, I'm trying
to mention that.
I'm trying to roll up the sleeves, trying to get the gun show going. But no, I'm in there, and I'll never tell guys where I work. I'm not that type of person. I'm just in there to work out. While I hear this guy just bad mouthing Matt. Well, if Matt Ryan had an arm and he could throw the football, that ball doesn't get intercepted in the end zone. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Are you watching the same football game that I'm watching? Understand, Philadelphia is a team that many people pick to go deep into the playoffs. They get paid a lot of money over there. Chip Kelly is considered a genius as a head coach. There's going to be times that they're going to make plays. It's the NFL. You're not in high school where you're playing somebody that you're going to beat 65 to nothing.
J.Y., it's so funny you bring up the story about Matt. I'm sitting at the game. I'm sitting in one of the suites, and I'm sitting next to a guy, and he's asking me, he's like, why can't Matt throw the deep ball? What's up with that? And I said, he can throw the deep ball. And I said, he just threw the touchdown. And he said, oh, that was like a 20-yard throw. So coming out, I think it's the fourth quarter,
yep.
First play of the drive, he throws a bomb to Julio. All I do is look. I just look at him.
Yeah.
He said, you're right. You got it. He can't throw the deep ball. And that's all I said. I mean, people don't understand the logistics of playing quarterback and how hard it is.
Right.
People just look at it like he's dropping back trying to find an open guy. There's so much other stuff going on. That you have to realize, and like you mentioned, those guys on the other side of the field are getting paid too.
Right,
and they're going to do their job too.
And let's not forget that, okay, Matt Ryan is a veteran, all that stuff, great, but this is still a new offensive system.
Yep.
This is a new set of guys around him. Mm-hmm. I mean, the changes that have happened from a year ago to now are vast. And so you've got one game that you're judging this off of. I don't know that Matt has fully had a chance to ingest the playbook,
right.
And you're still effective. Right. You're still extremely effective on the offensive side of the football. That, to me, is a scary thought when you start getting into weeks 8, 9, 10, when he starts hitting his groove. And hopefully he does that earlier. But my goodness, I mean, the way he was able to be effective, and you know, you mentioned that one particular play where he got picked off in the end zone. I mean, he had a guy in his chest when he threw that.
Well, and Kiko Alonso makes a play
exactly.
That 95% of the linebackers in the NFL, he literally is one hand. It was an Odell Beckham-ish type catch,
yeah. Yeah.
Out of a linebacker. If not, the ball hits Roddy right in the chest.
Right.
That's where you're supposed to put it. And then, by the way, you talked about the deep ball in the fourth quarter when the Falcons had just lost the lead. I know Matt remarked about this after the game. He said the second he saw them in bump coverage with Byron Maxwell up, he knew immediately he was going to throw the ball to Julio Jones. Byron Maxwell, sorry. You're not going to face anybody like that the rest of the year. His reaction was priceless, by the way.
Here's one thing for the guys who say, okay, yeah, he threw that and Julio did a good job. He just threw it out there. Matt did an excellent job of what we call holding the safety. He has to sit there and hold the safety in the middle of the field, because if not, if he looks over at Julio right now, comes to the line, I got bump coverage, oh, I'm throwing to Julio. If I come right back and I look at Julio right now, the safety's going to run over there. He does a good job of holding the safety and then throwing a very accurate ball. It's a lot going on that people don't realize. And just that one little small thing,
mm-hmm.
That one little small thing is the difference between an incompletion or a completion or an interception. So he's doing a lot, not just throwing it out there to Julio.
Your argument is invalid. All of you out there just got owned.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Shock told you. Face is exactly what he just told you. Now, another guy who was fantastic, Matt Bosher. I don't know if he had made the Pro Bowl yet, but if I can put a vote in for week number one, over 57 yards per punt on Monday night, including a huge one. Typically, you punt in the fourth quarter and Darren Sproles is back there. We're all kind of collectively holding our breath. And Matt Bosher kicks one, basically, as West Durham would like to say. He kicked it to Alpharetta, which is basically what he did. And then Levine Toilolo comes down with an unbelievable open field tackle. But how about Bosch flipping the field play after play?
This is one of those storylines that I really wanted us to talk about this week, because, look, there's a lot of storylines that came out of Monday night's game. And this is one of those things that I think is hugely important, but it's going to get overshadowed.
Major.
Because you start to take guys like Matt Bryan and Matt Bosher for granted.
Yeah.
And even to some extent, the special team units, guys like Eric Weems, your Levine Toilolos, Alan Bradford's, those guys, you start to take for granted just how good they are against a Philadelphia team that can move the ball down the field as fast as they can. Field position is everything. And that's exactly what Matt Bosher was able to do. both on punts and kickoffs.
Yep.
I mean, how many kick returns did they have?
I don't think they returned any.
They didn't have any. He kicked it out of the end zone.
And that's a team a year ago that had 11 non-offensive touchdowns, Philadelphia. Now, granted, that's some defensively, but that means they get special plays out of their special teams.
Changing field position is probably one of the most underrated stats that people don't even realize about. And one thing that I look back into the game is – there was a punt that Bosch kicked, and it rolled out like the 3-4 yard line. Sproles let it go of his head.
Yeah.
Come back to the end of the game, he kicks the exact same punt, and Sproles says, all right, I'm going to catch this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chance. There's a chance he could roll out again, so I'm going to take my chances. And I think just that small little thought in his head made him think, usually I'll let this go.
Right.
I'm going to come out on the 20, and we're going to roll out. But this time he ends up catching it, and it ends up being a great play for the Falcons. Changing the field position of a game, making teams go long field, like you just talked about with the Philadelphia, who has a quick offense, making them go, 90 yards, equivalent to some teams maybe going 60 or whatever. It just changes the game. I remember always talking about the beginning of the game and coming out of halftime are two of the most important plays of the game, mm-hmm. and because they change momentum, they change the tempo of the game, and our special teams is spot on.
Think about the difference in the game. Cody Parkey misses, a 43-yard field goal that would have put Philadelphia in the lead? Matt Bryant is money time and time. I never even worry whether he's going to make it or not. Now, again, if it's 55, 56, okay, you have a slight worry. Anything inside of 50 to me is automatic with him. And how nice is that? Because Chip Kelly, he would love to trade kickers right now with the Atlanta Falcons.
And, I know a lot of people get upset about the offense stalling out and having to bring the field goal unit out. But when you bring that unit out, if it's as automatic as this one is, I mean, it's the difference in the ballgame.
Right.
Look at the score. You win by 2 points. It's the different. One of those kicks is the difference in the ballgame. So that, to me, is just so huge when you can rely on that aspect of the game time and time again.
One guy that we could rely on and came up with an unbelievable game-clinching, sealing interception is Ricardo Allen. I don't think this transformation has been talked about enough throughout the preseason. It's almost just like we expected, okay, he's the starting safety, we'll just let him be. But you mentioned it, Jay, and I know I've talked to you off the air about this. It's a guy that was cut. This was a guy that was on the practice squad, and most people remember him more for the zip line incident, not incident, but the zip line portion that was on Hard Knocks a year ago. Mm-hmm. Him being up on the zip line with his girl, and that's what people remember Ricardo Allen for. Now they're going to remember him for something totally different. And I saw a moment at the end of the game, not the pick, but he comes running off the field, and guys got to go to the tunnel. He stops where all the fans are, takes off every glove, wristband, everything, handing it to fans, and he's got that football tucked under there like Omar Epps in The Program. He wasn't letting that thing go.
I actually talked to him on Wednesday about that very thing. I said, how long did you hold on to that football? And he said, well, geez, it was at least until after prayer. So probably 30 minutes after he made the interception, he was still holding on to the football. And I said, you showered with it, didn't you? And he's like, no, I didn't do that. But that was one of the great moments. I think this is one of those stories that it's just you love to see it as an observer. A guy who gets cut, who comes in and works his butt off on the practice squad, gets moved over to a different position, and you're thinking, well, he's really behind the eight ball now, and then comes out and he's ultimately the hero of week one. I asked defensive coordinator Richard Smith about him yesterday, and he gave one of his longest answers of his press conference in talking about Ricardo, and he marveled at just how much work he's put in. Our good friend Vaughn McClure from ESPN.com had this great story about he's been studying film with his wife. They've got a grease board and
that's
everything.
Awesome.
They sit down and they have dinner dates and they're drawing up plays and she's testing them out and all
Where can I find a woman like
I asked
that?
Him, I said, scale
where are you at, lady?
Scale of 1 to 10, how much did you hit the jackpot? He's like, 10, easy. But that's one of the things that you don't see all the time. You saw some of this stuff in Hard Knocks, but the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, the work that some of these guys put in, they're not there by accident.
Yeah, it's all about overcoming those situations, and I thought he is a guy who's overcome all those situations. You guys have mentioned it, and I think when you get to that point and you get to that initial feeling of, okay, I'm here now, and you go back and you kind of think about what got me here, it just makes you work harder. It gives you that hunger. It gives you that extra energy, that extra effort to do the things at home to get better. I was watching, I can't remember who it was, but a guy has like the jug machine in his house. I mean, things like that are – what motivates you to be better. And once he's finally got this shot, he's got his position, he's in a franchise where he can really, really be himself and excel, I think he's taking full advantage of it. It was just it almost seems surreal probably to him that he's come from this far and then his first game starting, he ends it with an interception. And I think that's why holding that football was like a symbolism of this is how far I've come.
Yeah.
And he did just that. Let's talk about the actual play itself for a second. The interception is, I mean, he's running one way. He kind of slips going back to catch the ball off the deflection off Jordan Matthews. And then it's like basically full extension to come up with this pick. I remember one play eerily similar in the Fiesta Bowl back in 03. Sean Taylor makes a play like that where he's full extension. For Ricardo Allen to be mentioned in the same name as Sean Taylor lets you know, that's a pick that you don't see. There's probably 95% of the league drops that, and the Falcons are still up against it.
I mean, the Eagles had an interception, a possible interception over on their sideline that their safety dropped the same way. I mean, it wasn't even as hard of a catch, and he dropped it. So it just tells you how hard of a play that is to make, and he made it in a key moment.
Well, to him, it was no big deal. I mean, this is a guy who set a record at Purdue for returning touchdowns or returning interceptions for touchdowns. I mean, he's not a stranger to interceptions. The play is amazing. I think when I was watching, I was down on the far end of the field, and I was just kind of looking at Matt and trying to get his reaction to whatever was happening. And so I didn't really get a good vantage point of it. And to go back and watch it the day after and see just how athletic that play was, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Unbelievable is the perfect word. Couple other things we want to get to before we preview the Falcons and the Giants. Falcons did sign Jake Long. We talked about him last week. He practiced yesterday, his first practice with the team, more so a walkthrough than anything. I don't know, and I know a lot of fans have tweeted me and asked, and I'm sure Jay and DJ, you guys have gotten the same thing. Is he going to start this week? No, it's not going to happen. Could he start somewhere down the road? Yeah, if he earns the job. This isn't going to be a situation where, hey, you're the former number one, you're going to be handed a job. He's got to go out and earn it, and Ryan Schrader played pretty well the other night. I didn't call his name, or I didn't hear Wes call his name for making any mistakes. And as an offensive lineman, that means you had a good game.
That's good. And I think the offensive line is another one of those storylines that's come out of this game. And I think they played extremely well, considering we've had some changes here over the last few weeks. Really, you know, the addition of Jake Long is interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how they use him and how they bring him into this system. But I do think he'll be down for the Giants game for sure. I think you can look at Dallas and say, okay, you know, he may be active, but maybe not starting. But again, to your point, I mean, Ryan Schrader played a heck of a game. And so I think a lot of times these things we're seeing with Dan Quinn is you bring guys in, and it makes nobody feel safe. And I think just adding that little bit of maybe a little discomfort at times for some guys brings it to another level.
And here's what you also know about Jake Long is he's a four-time Pro Bowler, I believe. So he has experience. He's seen a lot of different pass rushers. And if anything, if he's not playing now, he's going to help those younger guys. He's going to help the other guys as far as how to line up. You know, the different stuff that they're going to see versus different players. And I think he's going to add that different dimension and help these guys get better, not only just on the field, but in the classroom as well, how to study certain people. He's seen so many different pass rushers in his time that he's going to say, all right, this is how this guy likes to play certain situations or downs. And I look at it from the inside out where he's going to really help these guys get better until he, you know, finally gets his chance. And he said it. Nothing was promised to me when I got here.
Yeah.
And he knew that. He knew he was just glad to have the opportunity to come back and play and have the chance. So I think he's going to really look at this like a lot of guys on this team already are doing. This is a chance for me to get my career back going again.
Yeah, and I met him on Tuesday. Couldn't have been nicer. Mm-hmm. Super excited to be here. And then I observed him Wednesday in the locker room, during open locker room, and he is already ingrained with these guys. Talking to the linemen, joking around with them. I mean, there's already relationships being built there. Of course, we know that him and Matt Ryan are forever tied because of the same draft class. Mm-hmm. So there's a relationship there, too. And I think that helps kind of get you rolling as we kind of move forward with him, because again, he didn't participate in anyone's training camp. He didn't go through anyone's preseason, so he's got a little bit of catching up to do.
It's going to take him a little while to get up to game speed. Now, speaking of the game, last thing we'll talk about the Eagles game, and I'll shock, I'm going to start with you, because I didn't see you down on the field. You're up getting ready for the post game coverage on the Falcons Radio Network. How nervous were you in the – just even say fourth quarter when Philadelphia takes the lead?
I was pretty nervous because I think when Philly takes the lead, Falcons get the ball back, and then we have issues on like the first and second down, and it's like a third and 15, and we run the draw to Tevin Coleman, and he picks up 16 yards and picks up the first down. And I wrote that down in my notes. I said, all right, if this comes back to help us and it helps us end up winning the ball game, that'll be a huge play of the game. And it does, because we come back and we end up throwing the ball to Julio, and then we end up getting the field goal, which ultimately is the winner. But the way Philadelphia was playing, the way they were moving the football, you had to be nervous. And the only thing you could hope for was, all right, defense would need you to make a stand. Pretty much that's what it is. And the nervousness was there. I'm not going to lie. To sit here and say, oh, I wasn't nervous at all. Yeah, right. I was nervous because they were playing really well. Defense was still in that bend but not break mode, but I was just hoping and praying that, hey, they came through and they did.
This is how we live, baby. Yeah. We live on the razor's edge, and we have for a long time. And, you know, think about back to, you know, 2011, 2012, how many games were decided within those last few minutes. And it went our way. And then 2013, 2014, those plays didn't go our way. And then you see the difference in the record. So I've kind of gotten used to it, but certainly not numb to it. I mean, you're definitely nervous going into those last few minutes. But if the ball's in Matt Ryan's hands, I have complete confidence that he's going to get it done. I do want to pick your brain a little bit on an issue that I've gotten a couple of questions about on Twitter, and that's the wide receiver screen passes, those bubble screens that we were running. We ran three of them and got holding penalty or pass interference penalty on all of them. Do you know what was going on there? Have you looked at those plays to know?
The big thing is you can't be blocking before he catches it. And a lot of times the receivers are blocking before Roddy or Julio, whoever catches the screen, so they call it offensive pass interference. And it's hard to time out. It's supposed to happen really quick, so it's kind of like a bang-bang play. But sometimes they're catching it that way. And one time there was a hold on Hankerson on the one going towards the Falcon sideline. But other times it's such a bang-bang close play that they look at it like, okay, he's blocking before he catches the ball down the field. And I remember there were plays we ran all the time where guys run out, and then they kind of look back, and as soon as they see the ball in there, they commence to blocking. So it's not a pass interference, and that's one of the biggest things that you got to realize in that particular play. But they're not going to stop running that play because it can be a very productive play if it works really well. It's
super fixable through practice.
Absolutely,
I imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an easy fix.
I had to bring that up because I've gotten so many questions about that.
Yeah, it's a great point, and you know the thing with that. Julio would have had like 11 for 190 if those two plays aren't called back. Okay. I mean, that lets you know. For me, how nervous was I? Kind of to piggyback what Jay's, my fifth year on the sideline, I'm getting used to every game is going to come down to the wire seemingly. I was more nervous when they got the ball back trailing 26-24, when we were unable to run out the clock with just over 2 minutes to go, because as you mentioned, with the ball in Matt's hands, we're going to get into field goal range if that's all we need, and Matt Bryant's going to win the game. I'm supremely confident in that. The defense was worn out. Philadelphia was pacing them. You know, guys had given everything they had in three-quarter quarters. So this was a team that was worn out a little bit. So I was nervous. When we got them stopped on first down, I think they threw an incomplete on first down and weren't able to establish rhythm. Then I said, you know what, we're going
to
win this game.
And then they had the little pass out to Sproles on the right side. Yeah. Willie Moe got it.
And we made a tackle.
And made it third and long. And you just knew.
Well, I mean, they kept running that play, and it kept working for them. They kept going back to that well, and I think they just went one too many times.
Coming to that play, I saw Trufant and I saw Willie Moe because they ran that same formation. Two receivers over, Sproles in the backfield with a tight end, and they always ran some combination to the flat that allowed Sproles to be open. But what I saw, because I saw this formation, I said, okay, here they come. They come with that same play again that's hurt us all game. So I saw Willie Moe and Trufant, I saw both of them say, I got him. I got him. Point him out so there's no confusion. And as soon as the ball was snapped, Willie Moe ran right to Sproles, so you know exactly who you got. And that's just the leadership on the back end. That's who you're talking about, guys who play together. They know the game, and they want it because they came out exactly what they saw. I saw Willie Moe set in and say, all right, I got him. I don't care what's going on. He didn't look inside the Sam Bradford. He didn't look at nothing but Sproles, and that told you right there, we're not going to let him beat us. If somebody else is going to beat us, it's not going to be this guy who's done it all game.
Yep.
Yeah, and one of the things on that two-minute drive, typically the first couple of plays gets an offense and a rhythm. So good for the Falcons for stopping that rhythm and sitting at 1-0. Unfortunately, and I don't want to say unfortunately, we have to move on to week number two.
Before we move on, I got to pat myself on the back. It has to happen. You guys go back and look at the pregame show I did on CW.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked, you know, prediction for the game. I was asked score and all that kind of stuff. The last thing I said was why was the Falcons would get a turnover to win the ball game.
Ah, look at you.
Sometimes you get lucky, you know.
This is called the Back Pat DJ Show, because we'll get some more of that a little bit later on.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of it.
That's all right.
It was weird that it happened like that. You know, it just like you mentioned, for years it always comes down to the end of the game. Yeah. And I knew this was going to be one of those games where something was going to happen that was going to allow you to get a win or, you know, other way around.
Best thing is you're heading to New York, sitting at 1-0. The Giants are coming off a heartbreaker on Sunday Night Football to the Dallas Cowboys. They're at 0-1. Interesting matchups across the board. Odell Beckham was really held in check by the Cowboys. They spent a great amount of time doubling him, beating him up at the line of scrimmage, bracket coverage over the top. He's going to have a little bit more of a, and I don't want to say a true one-on-one matchup, but Desmond Trufant, I have to imagine, is going to shadow him a little bit more this week. What do you guys think about that matchup moving forward?
One of the things that I noticed coming out of that first game was that Trufant was avoided completely.
Yeah.
I mean, he had that one really nice pass deflection there, but Sam Bradford didn't want any. And, you know, he is starting to become a truly elite cornerback, one that's going to be considered a shutdown. I think this is a huge test for him. Odell Beckham Jr., of course, his exploits highly publicized. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's a good test. We'll see where he's at. I know True is open to that challenge, and, you know, it's going to be an exciting one to watch.
And for a guy who doesn't lack any confidence, he'll be revved up and ready to go for this game. And that's what you want from your number one corner, is they want to play against the best. They want to compete against whoever their number one is and say, all right, I'm going to stand in front of you and I'm going to shut you down. Mm-hmm. And not to go back on the last game, but Maxwell thought the same thing. I just got paid a lot of money.
He thought wrong.
Mm-hmm. I got paid a lot of money, and I can stand in front of Julio Jones and say, this is why I got paid the big bucks. And it's going to be the same thing this game. True's going to say, all right, I'm on the rise,
right.
And it starts with Beckham. And if you remember last year, this was his coming out party. Mm-hmm. He had a couple touchdowns last year. So I think True's going to be excited about it, and I think Alford's going to be excited about it too, because he's going to want to get some get back for that first, you know, touchdown he got on him. So I look forward to the matchup. I definitely feel True can hold his own. He's just as quick. He's just as physical. And he can run with him, and I think he will.
What's the biggest fear and shock, I'll start with you, that you have with the Giants?
I think it has to be the way they ended the game last week. I think they're going to come out with a new attitude about, hey, we can't go 0-2.
Right.
The percentages of you being 0-2 and making it to the playoffs are well documented, but I think they're going to come out with a newfound attitude about how to play this game. They're going to make sure, hey, you just played one of our division opponents, and you know you got to win, and they can't fall two games back in the NFC. And I think that's going to be one of the things. And also, if it comes down at the end of the game, that's where I'm really not going to be nervous about, because if they have the same issue of something coming up toward the end of the game, how will they respond? So it's going to be a little bit of extra thinking on their behalf of how they handle a certain situation. But I just think they're gonna come out with a newfound fight. They're going to want to fight hard because, hey, it's their first home game. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want to come out and really put a good showing on for the home crowd.
Jay?
My fear is that some of the stuff that we saw maybe on Monday night might be a fluke, you know, and I don't know that that's going to be the case, but I think that's what you fear after.
Right.
You come into your own place, it's Monday Night Football, you're all amped up. I think your fear is the letdown in game two, right?
Which happened last year.
So that would be my biggest fear, is how do you sustain the energy and how do you sustain the things that got you to victory in the first place, the technique things, the big plays, all of those kinds of things, I think really come into play here. It's the sustainability, the consistency that you want to see out of this team. You got to come out in week two and you got to prove it, and you got to prove it in their place.
But Jay, you've been around probably more than anybody, being around Coach Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably could attest that Coach Quinn probably won't allow that to happen.
He's not short on energy, and he's
not
going to
allow
guy.
It. Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is going to be a team that you're not. I don't think you're going to come out on too many Sundays and watch them play and say, you know what, they weren't prepared for this.
Right.
I don't think you're going to see that. So I think it all comes down to whatever the mentality is going to be. And Coach Quinn is really good about keeping a pretty steady mindset, pretty steady mentality for these guys going forward. So I do think that it's a long shot, but it's one of those fears for me is that, man, you come out and you just have a letdown after such a big win.
My biggest fear is always the opposing quarterback. Eli Manning is one of those hot, cold guys. When he's hot, he's as good as anybody that's played this game in a long time. When he's cold, he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. He had some stretches against Dallas where he was red hot. I mean, he was throwing the football, hitting guys, finding some different targets. We have to find a way to keep him the guy that he was towards the end of the game with the brain fart and not being able to figure out, hey, I just need to take a knee and let's kick a field goal and let the clock run and all that good stuff, because he's done that. The other fear with that is the New York media has been all over him. There was a headline in the Post or the Times where they had him in a dunce cap and it said the $84 million dollar mistake.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's one game, and that's the fear. That New York media, we're fairly nice down here. I mean, we have some guys that are bulldogs, but you know that New York media is looking for an edge, and they've been all over the Giants. Can they find a way with what we did, and you just mentioned maybe a letdown factor, can they find a way to use all of that as motivation? And that's what becomes my fear. Biggest key to the win this week against the New York Giants. I said tackling in space last week. I thought they did a pretty good job. For me this week, make the Giants one-dimensional. Whether it's Rashad Jennings, was it Andre Williams, you know, name some of the guys they have in their backfield. I think Shane Vereen's there now as well. You've got to find a way to take away that aspect. Make it an Eli Manning game where he has to throw it 45 or 50 times. He does that, the Falcons are going to pick him at least twice, and they'll win this game.
I'm going to go right back to where I was last week, and I'm just going to say the key is the offensive line and keeping Matt upright. I mean, you know, obviously the Giants are without their star, Jason Pierre-Paul, but still a formidable front that you've got to contend with. So for me, keep Matt upright, give him some time, biggest key to the game.
By the way, did you see Jason Pierre-Paul's tweet today that said, I've never got a sack with my index finger?
Wow. You got to grab people with that thing, though.
You do.
Yeah. Come on. I think it's run the ball. I think you did a good job of it last week, running the ball where you needed to. Obviously, there were a couple plays in the game, especially a couple 31s that you wish you picked up. But I thought for the most part, the offensive line did a good job of creating some holes. And like you mentioned, just keeping Matt upright. But if they can run the football with some kind of just run it well and then create some one-on-ones. And we know exactly when the Falcons get one-on-ones what's going to happen. Right. So if they can force Aiden to box at times and then be able to throw the ball down the field, it'll be a good day for the Birds.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great day. It's time now. We'll take a little break. Bosek's over there doing a great job. He was energized. You should have seen him on the sideline.
Oh, yeah.
Ear to ear.
Big.
Looked like he had won the lottery.
He was big.
I was jacked up.
Yeah. You were.
I was listening to Matt, and he was jacked up, so I was getting me jacked up.
Yeah, Matt Ryan mic'd up.
Yeah, it was
there
nice.
You go.
Yeah, I've never seen him so excited when Ricardo Allen had that interception. It was Jay was standing right next to me.
It was pretty awesome.
Jay had to listen to Wes, Arch, and I. Which we were excited as well.
You were excited as well. Absolutely.
You could see that clip on Mic'd Up.
All right. There you go. Shameless plug.
Mic'd Up.
Mic'd Up. Bosek, what's the most interesting thing you have ever found out about a player? My thing was that sprouted this was Ricardo Allen.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it got cut last year and all the work he had to put in, so that was pretty interesting to me.
I think, you know, I've done a lot of as a writer, my home has always been like the feel good feature story and like really the Phoenix rising out of the ashes kind of stuff, and there have been a couple of really good stories like that on this team since I've been here. I think one of the most shocking to me was the Ryan Schrader background, because I don't think many people realize this. This is a kid who was 5'7" his junior year of high school.
Wow.
Comes back to his senior year and he's like 6'5".
Wow.
So he grew like a weed.
Wow.
During that time period, and all of a sudden he becomes this absolute force. Goes to JUCO and then ends up in Valdosta State. You know, does pretty well there. But in between that, this is a guy who just – he didn't bother going to college to start out. He took a year off. He was delivering steaks to restaurants. That's what he was doing.
Wow.
So, I mean, just to hear you coming from – I'm providing restaurants with meats on a weekly basis – to I'm a starting.
Now you're hitting somebody with a meat hook.
Right. To I'm a starting right tackle. I think that's one of the most amazing stories that I've come across.
For me, most interesting, and this goes back to Hard Knocks. I got to look in the camera straight. Willie Moe, how the heck do you get a palm tree inside your house? Like, how does that happen? I saw that, and I'm fascinated as a guy that grew up on the beach. I love the palm tree. Like, when I see palm trees, I know I'm getting close to the ocean.
You see that contract again? That's how you get palm trees in your house.
I don't even have a ficus.
Yeah, I killed what's the thing that Daniel's son had?
Bonsai.
Bonsai. Yeah, that lasted like 3 weeks in my house and died. Now it's just mulch outside. But yeah, how do you keep palm trees in your house? I have no idea how that works. That's my guy, though. Willie Moe's my dude.
All right, for me, it goes back to a guy I played with, and Joe Horn. You guys remember Joe Horn?
Oh, yeah.
Joe Horn.
Cell phone in the goalpost.
Joe Horn hated to fly. Whenever we got on the plane, Joe would get the pillows that they give us, and he would be literally stuffing it in his face, and he would just be rocking for at least 30 minutes into the flight. Wow. This is a guy who has what they call it? Big RV.
Okay.
He has a big RV that he goes everywhere with. He went to the Pro Bowl. He told this story. He went to the Pro Bowl. He asked them, is there a way that I can drive my caravan, my RV, to Hawaii? I mean, serious. He was like,
that doesn't work.
This is how bad he hated to fly. So wherever he went, he drove everywhere. He drove everywhere.
I think we could do a whole show on, like, charter flight stories.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, because there are guys on the team right now who are petrified of flying.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not one of them.
No, me neither.
I mean, I'm so used to it now.
Like, and we have some bad flights, right? Like, when you're on a charter, I don't think people realize, like,
ain't nobody in seatbelts. Nobody's in seatbelts.
Pilots are just like, you know what? Let's just take this thing up to, like, 630 miles an hour.
And we're moving.
You get in the jet
stream. We get to New York in, like, 45 minutes.
You're flying, like, when you descend, you know how when you're on a commercial flight, it's just that nice gradual thing. We're like, whoom. We're like down. These guys are like really kicking the tires on this thing. And
we all look at each other like, coming in hot.
Yeah, coming in hot. But there's some bumpy flights. There's some weird landings that, you know, so all that. So we could do a whole show on that.
Yeah, this week will be interesting because it's the first weekend that we'll be on a flight where college football is live and actually being played.
And I'm not looking forward to that.
People that have like crazy reactions. I don't know who those people would be. You know, when Georgia Tech's playing or Georgia's playing or, you know, some of these other schools. Yeah, Miami maybe. There's some people that may.
Ain't no maybe. We know you are.
May clap
this is
and
what's
yell
gonna,
out.
This is going, what's going to happen. The flight is always pretty quiet. Because
everybody's got
headphones on. They're watching movies, all that kind of stuff. A couple of years ago, I was sitting behind John Michaels, like maybe two rows. And I'm reading a book and just relaxing and everything. And just in the middle of flight, quiet as can be, you. Like, what is going on up here? Every couple of minutes, he was driving me nuts.
Usually what happens when folks get on the plane, they you know, thinking about what they're going to eat. I know John Michaels will get on there and ask, hey, you guys got cable on there?
No, that's Delta, please have ABC this week. I'm begging, because if not, I'm going to be listening on my phone. You know, I got the app where I can listen on my phone.
Right, and so you're going to be you'd be fine if we took off like a space shuttle just so we could get up to 10,000 feet for the Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
John, don't worry about it. I just text you when, you know.
No, see, I don't need the text.
I text you when Miami's, you know, down by 30.
See, I'm one of those guys that in any athletic event, whatever I'm watching, I turn the phone off. I can't deal with people. Did you see that play? Yes, I saw the play. Of course I saw it. What's this other question you have,
Bob? Yeah, what is this?
I couldn't think of a break and post that question. That's what I wrote down. But
I asked my wife when I saw the script last night. I said, do you know what this is?
I think it's a good question.
It is a good question.
Because so we asked the question.
Yeah, I don't even know what this means.
Here's the question.
I don't know what it means either.
Where are all of the Sour Patch parents?
You like the Sour Patch Kids? Is that what we're talking about?
Sour Patch Kids. There's no Sour Patch parents.
Oh, so it's one of those funny.
Did you guys partake in something last night that made you come up with this question? What's
going on? Came up with that. I don't know.
Did you get into the brown liquor? Is that what happened?
It's a good question.
I think it's a good question. I think you could ask the Falcons this question in the locker room. Find out where they are.
Did you guys have a couple of Red Bulls or something while you were freaking drinking?
I have a buddy who has Sour Patch Kids tattooed on his arm. That speaks more about me having friends like that.
I don't know.
So you were sitting there watching Sour Patch Kids and said, where are their parents?
Or were you eating some Sour Patch Kids going, right. You know, there's no Sour Patch Dads.
Right.
probably saw this on the internet.
Couch brainstorming.
Okay.
All right.
But obviously you like the question, so obviously it's something that you thought about as well.
It's not something I've thought about. I didn't think about it until I saw this question, but then I'm like, you know what? There's a point here. A lot of Sour Patch Kids running
no
around.
No way.
And no parents. They got to come from somewhere.
Oh,
and the
my
Sour
God.
Patch Kids get eaten so fast, they're not able to get so old enough.
So and then it's just Sour Patch, so they keep coming either. With more, huh?
Are they hatched? Is that what
this
happens?
This is one of those chicken versus the egg things. Yeah, I think this is a question we'll never know.
I got a feeling this will turn into a candy question somewhere as what's our favorite candy? Mm.
Maybe. Yeah.
Or your other question, what we had some months back about, what was it, vegetables or something with food we had? You had.
We always have something with food.
Probably.
I don't recall.
Let's not kid ourselves. Nobody remembers. Get to the video of the week. What do you got here, Bo? What do we got for a video today?
This one... DJ.
What is that face?
Get it. Get it. Look at that face. Look at that thing. Look at
it.
Letting it loose, man.
Rashawn was hitting the old school dance.
Let me tell you something. If I was wearing that same ensemble that DJ's got on and I started dancing, by the time I was done, I'd be all untucked. I'd be disheveled. I'd be all over the place. You still look good after.
Yeah, I'd have a button pop loose.
That's nice. That's nice. Look at the tongue out.
So where'd you learn that? Where do you learn this one at, Sean?
Is this one of those outtakes?
Oh, man.
Is this from like the bounce circa 2002?
This was just in between like one of our segments. And, you know, we're just wasting time. And me and Rashawn are pretty silly. You know, you've been on set with us every week. We're just silly people and... Whatever we feel at the time, we do. So this was nothing planned. It was just getting it. Just go for it. Whatever you got.
Gotta feel
it. You know, that's the best thing when you do TV or radio. Some of the
yourself.
Stuff that happens behind the scenes, I can tell you now, working with Mike Bell, and I know I talk about him a lot, one of the funniest guys, just naturally funny. Mm-hmm. The commercial breaks between him, Arch, and I would always just be complete laugh fest, or it'd be Arch and Mike screaming at each other.
Yeah.
As Arch was saying, you can't, like, I'm going to break down the game the right way. You're just yelling. But some of the outtakes, I never forget, we were up here and we used to do a show, I think it was every Wednesday, and we had Rich McKay on, back there in the amenities building. So it's all set up nice. Well, one day one of our guys back in studio forgot during commercial break to turn our microphones off. Actually, there was an interview being played. So Mike and I are sitting there for 12, 13 minutes, and we're just laughing and having fun and talking about being out on boats, some of the things that go on in boats. And all of a sudden on our text line, we start getting all these texts. So what happened on the boat? And Mike starts singing. Bo Morgan, who's our producer on the road game, Squidbilly. He starts going, Squidbilly's an idiot. And everybody on air, everybody that's listening is hearing this because, of course, our guy back in studio forgot to do
turn
so.
On, Mike.
But the whole point of that, yeah, you can have fun. You can have shock dancing a little bit wild.
Yeah. Well, before we get on air here, we sing some R&B.
We do.
And guess
one mic.
Guess who starts
one
it?
Mic. Five
this
guys.
This guy.
One
right there.
Mic. This guy right here starts it.
You started today's song.
I did. I had an idea today. I said, you know, you guys had, you know, little outtakes last week that went on Twitter that was pretty fun. I wasn't doing anything but sitting there, check.
We're going with a little Keith Sweat next.
It's Brickland. Cool. It's Bosek, man. We got to watch Bosek. Bosek is always recording. Got to watch it.
But that's so.
I like it, though.
I do my show, Austin App. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was coming up with the idea for the show, I said, look, here's what I want you to do. As soon as we get in there, turn the camera on.
And whatever happens.
Whatever happens. Like, so if you watch the show, like, there's little breaks in between. Like, that's all outtake stuff. Yeah.
Right.
That's all stuff that, you know, it's me and Bosek messing around or something stupid happens and all this. So that ends up being pretty funny.
But that's perfect, though. It's good
stuff. It's
good stuff. It's truly you.
When we're like this, we're all buttoned up. But, you know,
this is
as soon as this thing goes off, we're going to be.
This is serious.
This is where
we
let
doing?
You guys
wait,
go.
What were we doing? Literally, 5 minutes before we went on and started this show, these two guys are taking their shirts off behind the camera and we're showing off tattoos.
We were doing that.
We were showing each other our tattoos. And we were comparing tattoos and we were talking all about
all
tattoos.
All the ladies are saying, can Shock do this again? They're looking at me going, please keep your shirt on.
I didn't take my shirt off.
No, I don't need to do that either.
The guy in the chair was looking at us like we was crazy. He was like, these guys.
It was.
Austin just keeps his headset on. He doesn't, he doesn't want to deal with any of us. All right. The other fun stuff is picks to click. We went through this.
Let's talk about it.
Oh, see, look at him.
Let's talk about it.
Of course. He's fired. Woo! We'll start with Bosek. Bosek, you went, I would say, chalk. And the rules to this, we're not allowed to take Matt Ryan or Julio Jones.
Correct.
Desmond Trufant's one of the best players on the football team. You decided to go with Desmond Trufant, and you didn't win this week.
Nah, he was avoided.
It don't matter. You can't make no excuse for him. Hey, if he didn't make no plays, it didn't count.
He made one play.
He made one play.
Yeah, he made a play, but I'm saying – you got to take into consideration that people are not going to throw at him, so he's going to have a chance to make some
plays. This is why I say, you know, you come into this and you're like, oh, you know, I think the game kind of hinges on Jake Matthews. Well, how do you kind of you put that against, you know, maybe Trufant gets a big interception or Ricardo Allen at the end of the game? It's judging this is not easy.
Yeah. So if a guy doesn't get picked on, I mean, there's no way for him to be your guy.
Here's what's funny. Jay and I were talking about this down on the field, and at halftime I'm going, dude, I got picks to click. Yeah. I'm going to win this thing. And then
Warlow.
And then Paul Warlow. So you had Leonard Hankerson last week.
I had Leonard Hankerson. I thought they would go to him a little bit more because I was a little concerned that they might target up on Julio, and then with Roddy with his elbow, I didn't know where it would be.
I had Tevin Coleman, who had a good game, 20 carries, right, 80 yards, and I thought I was going to win until Paul Warlow, picked by one DJ Shockley, had
that
the tackle.
That third and one.
That clinched it. Locked and loaded.
Locked it up.
Well, you know, what can I say? I want to give thanks to Paul Warlow. He went out and played a very great ball game. I appreciate you, Paul Warlow.
Without Paul Warlow, you'd be nothing.
Without Paul Warlow, I would not exist. So thank you very much.
I can tell you what's not going to exist this week is you picking first.
I should have been picked first because I won.
No, we're going to rotate this thing
around.
That
makes no sense.
You get picked last.
Who is making up these rules?
Me, because I'm running point on this. So Jay gets to go first.
We are playing prison rules, so that's
make it, take it, Ryan Hill. That's how I play.
That's it. You know, I'm going to take Devontae Freeman in this because I really think that his role is going to expand. I think they gradually brought him back in the first game. He got a couple of carries. Tevin got the main workload. I think you're going to see that start to balance out a little bit more, and I think Devontae is going to start getting those carries. I think he could. He's one of those guys where one cut and he could break a big one. So I'm gonna put my chips on him.
He's a Florida State guy, so I'll stay away from him this week. But he did play. Devontae was running with anger the other day. And how about him almost getting into it with the nose tackle of the Philadelphia Eagles? Sight size discrepancy.
Devontae, they are trying to huddle up. He's still at the ball.
Right. Yeah, he was woofing.
I like it, though.
I'm going to go to the defensive side of the football this week because I think Eli is going to be bad Eli for stretches. And the guy that, outside of Paul Warlow, was most impressive to me was Justin Durant. I'm taking him. Falcons will make them one-dimensional. I think Durant's going to go double-digit tackles. And he comes up with a strip sack this week. So that's who I'm going with. Bosek, you get to go next. Shock, you're last.
Wow.
Losers out here.
What's up?
Who are you taking? Who are you taking?
You guys are going to call me crazy. I'm taking Trufant again.
Whoa! Back-to-back Trufant.
Back-to-back Trufant.
How much is he paying you?
I have faith in my man Desmond Trufant.
I see where you're going because he's going to get looks this week. Yeah. It's not going to be like that.
Right, exactly.
Because they're going to want to go to Odell.
I think what happens, you should take Trufant all year and grow your hair like him before the end of the season. See if we can get you some dreadlocks before the season.
I won this thing last year on the broad shoulders of Paul Warlow. I picked him week after
and
week after week.
We're leaving him there for shock if he wants.
But guess what? Stupid. But guess what? This ain't last year. Boom. This ain't last year.
So who you taking, Sean?
Ha! I'm going to go with my man, the UAB Blazers. He's stepping up. My man, 8-4. Roddy.
Okay.
I think Roddy is he's coming off the elbow last year. He had a couple catches last week. Getting back into his groove. Everybody saw the Monday night game, so guess what? Julio won't get those same looks again. So he's going to get doubled. That leaves one-on-one matchups like I mentioned earlier. Roddy is going to take full advantage, and you're going to see him screaming.
All right, so we got Devontae Freeman, Durant,
you know he does
that. Very,
Desmond
very
Trufant,
accurate.
And once again, he's going with 8-4,
Roddy
White.
8-4.
Appreciate you guys watching. Bubble. Make sure you tune in, 92.9 The Game of the Falcons Radio Network. This weekend, Wes, Arch, and I, and Falcons Giants from our home away from home. We've only been there like 9 times in the past 3
It'll
years.
Be fun.
It will
I'll
be.
Love it there.
Guys, great as always.
All right.
Wow. Oh.
2 weeks in a row. We're going to win the game now.